We've reached 4 million of
Mm-hmm.
those individuals, five times last year, with our message about the electrical industry and why it's an attractive place to work and make a difference. And it is an industry where you can make a difference.
Welcome to the Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is episode 101 of the Flux Capacitor, 101 discussions about the future of the business of electricity and the impacts of technological change and market transformation. For the 101st episode, my guest on the pod is
Carol McGlogan, and I'm president and CEO of Electric Federation Canada.
I'm delighted to welcome Carol to the podcast for a wide-ranging conversation. We talk about the need for policy certainty on electrification, pressures on supply chains, the role of energy efficiency, trade issues, and the complexity of tariffs. We also talk about how her association is helping to develop the future workforce, and we end our chat with a book recommendation to add to the Flux Capacitor Book Club. Here is my conversation with Carol, recorded at the end of October 2024.
We're an association, industry association for the electrical and automation industries. We have about 230 members. And we represent the manufacturing community, electrical and automation wholesale distributors, as well as third-party sales organizations. We're an interesting community, yeah. And it's almost more of a commercial community that goes back and forth. And we used to be three separate organizations at one time.
Right. Well, I mean, let me start off by saying welcome to the podcast. We talked about this for, I don't know, a couple of years. Every time our paths have crossed at conferences and events and stuff like that, I always say, oh, we need to get you on the podcast because of the commonality of the issues and the increasing interdependence. It used to be just kind of a dependence on the sort of supplier and supply chain to really kind of an interdependence now. But yeah, I'm delighted that you're able to jump on today. And maybe let's pull on that thread, just so that for the listener to get a better understanding of Electro Federation Canada. You noted it, you know, it was three other successor organizations. So what are the organizations that came together to form the current EFC?
So EMAC, which was the manufacturer side, and yep. On that side of the organization, we're focused mostly on codes and standards. Mm-hmm. Then it was CEDA, which is the Canadian Electrical Distributor Association.
Right.
And that was on the wholesale distribution side. And then CEMRA, which is the Canadian Electrical Manufacturers Reps Association. As a matter of fact, in the U.S., these are still three organizations, which we have relationships with each one of those three. And we've been together as one for 30 years. So next year is our 30-year anniversary.
Okay.
And there's a lot of discussion in the U.S. right now of the three organizations collaborating. So they're coming together and talking about electrification and talking about how they can move things forward. So they're getting together through MOUs and specific projects, but you know, we're together in Canada as one family.
Right.
And community. Yeah.
Yeah, and interesting. I actually knew EMAC quite well back in the day. Mm-hmm. When we first moved at the time CEA to our current base now in Ottawa, which would have been in 1991, we shared space with EMAC.
I heard that. Yeah. And so
So
how long was that for?
I think that was for probably 3 or 4 years
Okay.
that we were in shared space. It was probably up until the organizations came together and merged.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
Yeah.
what was the impetus to bring the three organizations together?
I think one thing was, there's always something to be said for scale, right? So I think from a scale perspective, there are a lot of commonalities in what the three organizations need. When I talk to my US counterparts, they're jealous of the participation and the sense of community that we
Oh,
have.
really? Okay.
Yes. So, for example, if I go to a NEMA conference, which I am in a couple of weeks down in the US, they may have 100 and 150 people at their conference, and their senior executive may be limited to, who's on their board and so on. But with EFC, we have 700 people at our conference, and because everybody does business with somebody in the room, and there is so much value in that. And we're a supply chain, right? So,
Yes, absolutely.
and especially in these times, we're a supply chain and we rely on each other. We hold each other's inventory. We represent each other's products. We tell each other's stories. So the more we can be together and we have similar problems, whether it's on talent or the economy and so on. So the more we can group together and talk about those common issues, and that we have a single organization that can do that, the better. So, I wasn't there at the table 30 years ago. I mean, I was in the industry 30 years ago, but I wasn't there at the table. But this is where I see the benefits, and this is what I imagine what their vision must have
And you mentioned actually a couple of things that
been.
would be interesting to talk a little bit further on. Certainly want to chat a little bit about supply chain, so want to chat about talent because those are two issues that keep coming up. But we're as an association based in Ottawa because our principal focus is on advocacy and advocacy for the generators, transmitters, distributors of electricity in the country. I'm wondering, are there federal legislative and regulatory issues that are of concern to EFC these days?
When I think about what we're trying to achieve in Ottawa is, one thing is about sending positive po policy signals when it comes to electrification, because what that does is it sets the framework and the groundwork for investment in supply chain. The other thing is about understanding that we are playing with a global supply chain. And there's a term called global allocations. I used to work at Philips, and of course, part of a global supply chain, and you're allocated globally on what you get for your country. And when it comes to electrification requirements, the whole world is going through the same thing at the same time. And we all need the same stuff. And the one thing I've learned over the years is business is not just about the brains, it's also about the heart. And when you're relying on global supply chains, a lot of times, yeah, the brains come into play, but there's also the hearts that are involved. And when those supply chains aren't rooted in your own country, there's sometimes difficulty in securing products that come your way. So we want Ottawa to know that we need to make sure that Canada is an attractive place to invest, to bring those capacity and supply chains into Canada so that we can secure our own future when it comes to our electrification needs. We also need to do this a lot faster, and so there, and then that is a time crunch on the supply chain and a time crunch on labor and everything else, right?
I think There was an event that both you and I were involved in recently. I don't recall exactly which one it was, but you know, we got onto the topic of supply chains and the concerns about supply chains and the need to have stability. Is nearshoring and friendshoring terms that are being used by your members? I always think of, you know, the in addition to, well, potentially a scarier world from a geopolitical standpoint that we live in, but I also, well, you know, reflect upon the disruption to the supply chains by just having a ship caught sideways in the Suez Canal.
Yes. Yeah.
So to what degree are sort of the nearshoring and friendshoring issues things that are being talked about by your membership?
Absolutely. Right. So many of our international members are investing more in North America. So it is the North American footprint
right.
that we're looking at. So Canada, US, and Mexico.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, and I wish I had my I can't access my system that quickly, but there is a natural nearshoring, onshoring happening.
Okay.
So, we were just sharing some information with the U.S. on the China tariff situation. Mm-hmm. And we had some data from NEMA to show that things where we are importing less.
Yeah.
And that is naturally happening. So the strategies are pointing in that direction, but this takes time. You don't do this in a nanosecond, right? So it takes time. So of course, with certain product categories, there's pain,
mm-hmm.
Those product categories are working through that pain while they're implementing their nearshoring activities.
Yeah. I hear about potentially some of those product categories from my members with some frequency around some of the big things like turbines to some of the not quite so big things but equally challenging around transformers and then even the smallest devices and things that are being used in this sector. So it's very much top of mind for the generators, transmitters, distributors on the electricity side of things. I'm hearing, for example, on some of these things, like for some types of transformers, you used to measure it in weeks and months in terms of what the delay would be to get equipment, and now it's being measured in years. Is that likely to get any better? Or I guess we all kind of thought post-pandemic, we had supply chain issues because of the pandemic, but like the pandemic's been over for a couple of years, and it doesn't look as though these issues are going to be getting better anytime soon.
Well, I mean, for one thing, the pandemic aside, there was a study done by Scotiabank that said, and you touched on transformers, that the demand for transformers and switchgear is going to go up by 5 times for the next 15 to 18 years.
Yeah.
Now, in the past, when you think about the demand for those products, it came, we didn't have data centers.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
So the market is evolving. So you have a different type of competition. The whole world is doing something at the same time. So it's like COVID. It's like the COVID vaccine. The whole world is doing this all at the same time. Plus you have a new phenomenon like a data center.
Mm-hmm.
And, just to put it in context, and also the world is going towards a distributed energy sources, which takes more of these transformers.
Yep.
So I think you and I were in Ottawa one day and I cited these facts where, for example, 1,000 megawatt nuclear or gas generating facility would require 55 to 70 transformers each.
Right.
The same output in wind or solar with battery storage needs 900 to 1,250 each.
Yep. Yep.
And then if you talk about a mega scale data center, it's 1400 to 1700 each. And that's, and you hear about some of these data centers getting their own energy sources as a result. So they're getting their own energy sources from an energy supply perspective, but you still need all those transformers and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
In there. So, transformer lead time is about 2 years, right? Switchgear is, I think, approaching a year. We were just touring one of our member facilities, and just yesterday, actually, and they're doing all they can to increase output. Of course, they're trying to reconfigure their lines, their supply chains, and so on. But again, all of these things just they take some time, and it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, there's nothing more I can say other than that, really.
Listen, I mean, I want to follow up on a couple of those, but one of the things I ask folks that come onto the podcast is about their journey. I think the listener finds it interesting to get a sense of what the journey was for some of the people who are now leaders in the sector. And it's been several years now, I think, what, since 2017 that you've been president and CEO at EFC. But what was your journey to that role? I always make the joke, Carol, when you were a kid on the playground, did you always dream of being the president and CEO of a major trade association in Canada?
Definitely not. As a matter of fact, when you talk about, when you were a child, and I always laugh at this, whenever I have to sign documents, and it's normally checks, that you have the pile of checks that you need to sign. When I was very young, remember the one a day vitamins?
Oh yeah, sure.
So I used to fill the vitamin bottle, that little vitamin bottle, with Smarties, and I used to pretend I was an executive and I would be signing documents, but apparently I had a headache and I'd have to consume the Smarties. So I think I wanted to be a leader. So that's one thing. But I started in the lighting industry. So straight out of university, I went to Wilfrid Laurier, specialized in marketing. My journey started in marketing, then for a Canlite organization that was owned by Genlite that is now owned by Philips. Then it was spun off. I eventually ran sales and marketing there, always involved in strategy, whether it was in the Canlite organization or the Philips organization. That seemed to have been my responsibility. And while I was with those two organizations, heavily involved in EFC from a volunteer perspective. So I chaired the EFC board many years ago, longer than I would like to admit. So chaired the EFC board, chaired some councils, and then when they needed a new leader, I was approached just because I seem to have been so involved on a number of their committees and the board and so on. So I'm here and I'm learning. I'm learning about, I used to talk about foot candles and things like that on the lighting side. And so now I'm learning about other parts of the electrical industry from a technology perspective, and I love to learn. And things are slowly moving from the head to what I call the belly, right? So when you know things and it's in your gut, it means you've internalized it a bit. So I can internalize a lot of things on the lighting side and go to market and how things work and channels and all of that. Those are deep in my belly, but this new territory that we're talking about, it's floating in between at this point in time.
Cool. All right. Well, listen, I want to jump back to a couple of things that you touched on a few minutes ago. And I think we've talked about this as well in the past, and that is the move to electrify and decarbonize, and the pressure that that's having on supply chains in Canada, in a North American context, with the massive investments in the United States with the Inflation Reduction Act, and as you noted earlier, right across the globe, everybody's moving in this space, and that's where I wonder what your view is over the longer term with respect to supply chains, if we're being challenged to this degree today. What are you seeing in terms of preparations to be able to meet that further surge that we're going to be seeing?
Well, I mean, it's a huge pressure, and I think one thing Canada needs to do is make sure that we have the economic environment so that we can secure the chains, the supply chains locally. There's also an issue with copper supply that our members are concerned about. So that's something, and I know that Canada has added copper to a critical minerals list. So the eye is on the subject. How far along we've moved on it, I don't think I can comment on, but it is a concern. Now there's also, there are also technologies out there for us to lessen the load, there's a lot that we need to do to expand, of course, and then also within that expansion, there's technologies that you can apply so that you can do it more efficiently. So, rather than go up 2.5 times the size of the grid, maybe you go to 2 times the size of the grid, that type of thing. So the grid can be smarter. But at the same time, if we lessen the load on the demand side with building efficiencies, now our research, and we did research with Pembina in Alberta, and it shows that we need to expand the renovation rate to 4.5% of the building stock between now and 2050. And we're current
The
rates.
renovation
So
rate.
in other words, 4.5% annually buildings need to be renovated to meet the 2050 goals.
Oh, I see.
Currently,
Okay. Gotcha.
Only 1% of the building stock is being renovated annually.
Gotcha.
So on the building efficiency side, that whole acceleration of employing the technologies that we have. It's not that we don't have them. So whether you're in an industrial environment and you're talking about variable speed drives or you're talking about lighting controls, it's all there. We need to do it 5 times faster.
So what do we need to do to speed that up? Do we need incentives? Do we need what's going to move us in that direction? Because it clearly the opportunity to see significant energy efficiency and at the same time economic activity, there's a whole lot of upside there.
Yes, there is. So, incentives definitely do help. And we were just taking a look at the incentives in Ontario, and there are incentives for lighting, and there are incentives for industrial. And it's hard for me to quantify, the incentives that are there. And what we're asking the government to take a look at is to take a look at that gap. What is the gap that's required? Now, in our Pembina report, we do have some information on the gap in spending for each province, there is a gap in Canada, and whether it's through private or public investment, the key thing on the building efficiency side is just to get the payback down to under 3 years. So you don't have to pay for the whole thing. What you have to do is you have to take each technology and you have to understand what their payback cycle is, and then you need to shore it up to bring it to that under 3%. And from what I understand is that spending and building efficiencies saves quite a bit on the grid side, if you can lessen the load there. There's an opportunity.
One of the other things that you mentioned, you said the T word earlier, tariffs. Yeah, no, but I'm just wondering what your perspective is on tariffs. For the listener, we're recording this less than a week to the US election, and there has been talk in that election about the potential for increasing tariffs. So I mean, I'm not asking your opinion about are tariffs a good thing or a bad thing, but how much do the potential for tariffs kind of enter into the calculus of like how your members are trying to anticipate how they're going to achieve their fill their supply chains as they go forward. Our tariffs, and we've seen some tariffs, come in over the last several years, and we may have more in the future. Do they impact our ability to access supply chains, or does it really not have an impact on the supply necessarily, but just on the price?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So it depends on, of course, whether or not you have alternative solutions. So if you do have alternative solutions, of course, that's what we're trying to do. Yes, it could impact the price, but then there's also the issue of, when you're putting tariffs on a raw material like aluminum, and then you're not putting a tariff on a finished good that is made up of 80 or 90% aluminum, that sends the wrong signal to domestic manufacturers. Okay. Because now you're undercutting a different, a different aspect of your economy. There's also the issue of tariffs and our free trade zone. So, we're tending to follow the US in certain things, and because we are trade partners, but Mexico is not necessarily aligning. And meanwhile, a lot of our supply chains have moved to Mexico from a Canada and the US perspective for all of our numbers. They've moved to Mexico, and now you've got an opening there. So the issue with tariffs, there is an issue with alignment within a free trading zone. And and tariffs on are very specific. The one thing we've learned just recently with the tariffs, they're very specific to to individual SKUs. So you can't make a broad statement. I used to think you could make a broad statement, but you really have to understand it at the particular line level. And then within that line level, you also have to do your homework in terms of what are the alternate supplies, where are the supply chains hitting, and then you can mobilize your membership to vote for or against a tariff. That's how granular it gets. From the tariffs on China and so on are a bigger political issue, and it's also an issue with alignment on the free trade zone.
Okay. So more complex than one would have thought, because
Yes.
it goes right down into the details. But
And
this,
way more granular than I would have thought.
yeah.
Yeah, and it was only recently when we started to dig into it, we realized how granular it is, because when they were introducing the new tariffs on aluminum, it was down at individual code levels.
Wow.
And we had to examine those code levels, what's
Okay.
in, what's out. And it was only our manufacturer members who could examine those code levels.
Gotcha. Okay. So it's both a micro and a macro issue. The micro issue right down to those codes, and a macro issue when it's about our partners within the same trading block. Yeah. Are you concerned about the Canada US Mexico trade agreement automatic review coming up in a year or two? Is that something that you've got an eye on?
Yes, and that's something actually. We're going to Mexico next week with Konami and NEMA, and that's one of the things that we would like to work on together as an electrical industry, and it'll be the first time we're doing that. In the past, we've kept to ourselves when it comes to those types of discussions. And because our supply chain is so connected, it's really encouraging. And we're talking about that next week, is the three organizations will get together. We'll try to understand again, and it's also by product type where the supply chains lie.
Gotcha.
So there are some general principles, and also what we find within our membership, sometimes as an organization, we can't make a stand because half of our companies want something one way, because they're domestic, and others that are global, or others that have footprints in the US or Mexico. Unless we can get consensus, sometimes the best we can do is stand back and make sure that the government offers options for people to get exemptions and so on, so that they can do it on an individual basis. Not very satisfying as an association, but fair.
And I'd assume probably in this space, like with respect to the review of the North American trade agreement, that you're likely looking for the same thing that you're looking for when you talked about at the very beginning of the podcast, electrification, and that's just clarity.
Yes. Clarity and the fact that we have laid our supply chains down. So to be more competitive globally, we've done that work. You know, when I was at CanLite, we had 7 or 8 manufacturing facilities in Canada. And it went down to one because we had laid our groundwork across North America to be more efficient, to bring lower cost products to market and so on. So we've done all that work, and then now to put all the borders back up again, then you've got a whole slew of investments that business is not interested in providing, and it's not going to be good for the customer either because your costs are going to go up.
Which is the reason why you consolidated and
Right.
simplified your processes to begin with.
And now that you're adding a barrier kind of external to the trade zone, you know, so now you've got another cost pressure. So you don't, every time you slice and dice, the costs just go up and up and up. So the more we can keep it open. Now we know that whether it's Democrat or Republican, everything is becoming increasingly, we'll call it provincial. You know, people are thinking about their own countries everywhere. So, you know, whether it's real or not, the belief is you bring your manufacturing back, and that's going to solve economic issues. But the truth is people companies can't find people. And a lot of the rise in manufacturing is about automation. And, you know, some organizations, I mean, we just went to one of our members the other day, and they've automated their entire facilities. And one of the issues that they had was people. You know, we couldn't find the people anyways. And if we didn't do this, we would have been stuck. Now they've got, you know, double, triple the capacity, can use fewer individuals, but that's what's happening in manufacturing. So just because you're going to nearshore or onshore doesn't, I mean, there will be jobs, but not to the magnitude of what there was many, many years ago. It's not the same impact.
Yeah, and because you'd mentioned talent and attracting talent, is it different? It's going to be a different kinds of skill sets that the sector is going to be looking for in terms of the talent that we want to attract.
Yeah, we're worried about you know, the STEM area because when it comes to our industry, we need those types of skills. So we're looking for a more diversified workforce right now. Within our membership, 25% of our employees are female, and that's half Canada's population. And the same goes with underrepresented groups. So when you're playing with a smaller pool, and you're attractive to a smaller pool, then you're going to have more challenges. So one of the things that we're trying to work on is bringing a more diverse pool to our membership. But we're competing, again, this is the same thing. We're competing for new people just like every other industry. So one of the strategic investments we've made is a talent attraction campaign. And in the last 2 years, we've been trying to attract I think it's 19 to 34 year olds in Canada, and we've reached 4 million of those individuals five times last year with our message about the electrical industry and why it's an attractive place to work and make a difference. And it is an industry where you can make a difference, not only personally, but to the environment. We had a very high recall rate of those ads. So our strategic investment is one of the areas is talent, just to be, and we're consciously trying to bring individuals from other industries into ours.
Okay, well, listen, Carol, I always end with the same question for everybody who comes on the podcast, and that is for a book recommendation. And we gather together all of the book recommendations onto our Flux Capacitor book club. So, what book would you add to our list and add to our Flux Capacitor book club?
Well, you know what? It may have it had when I think of books, I think of authors. So I love Kate Quinn and
Kate Quinn.
Kate Quinn. She's a historical fiction and wrote The Rose Code, The Alice Network, and Diamond Eye. And it's all about the war and different roles that women played in the war, whether they were part of a spy network, whether they were a sniper from a Diamond Eye perspective, or decoders. So I don't know what that says about me, but I'm fascinated by that era. So if somebody wants pleasure reading while learning a little bit about what happened during those times, and often when we think of wartime, we think about people who lost their lives and the soldiers and so on, but there was a lot that women did within that movement, other than being the nurses. So.
So if somebody wanted to start investigating the Kate Quinn books, which one would you should would you suggest they start with? Should it be the Rose Code or the Diamond Eye? Which one do you think
I
that would
thought
give them a really good introduction?
Diamond Eye was fascinating because it's based on a true story of
Okay.
a sniper, a
Of a
female
sniper.
sniper.
Fabulous. We
Yeah.
will add the Diamond Eye to
Okay.
our Flux Capacitor book club.
Okay.
And with that, Carol, I really want to thank you for taking the time to jump on the podcast. As I said, we've talked about this for a while. I've wanted to get you on for quite some time, and I'm delighted that we were able to make this work. And it was terrific to chat and catch up with you.
Yes, thank you very much, Francis. Great to chat with you as well.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. I hope what you've been able to glean from these conversations has been new insights and greater understanding of the complexity and challenges of ensuring that electricity continues to be delivered reliably and affordably to Canadian homes and businesses in this time of great change. Tune in for future podcasts. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me through our website at electricity.ca, on LinkedIn, and on Instagram as The Brad Bradley. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca and includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 101. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Carol's recommendation, The Diamond Eye by Kate Quinn. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.